Welcome to the Gateway and our weekly roundup of technology in review. I am pleased to be joined with my ever-present co-host, Biagio Pellese. Welcome, Biagio.
Ciao a tutti. Welcome. Welcome back.
And then we are also graced with the wonderful presence of Amin Varahin. I completely didn't practice that. So can you go ahead and actually introduce yourself like a normal human, Amin, please?
Yes, I will. I appreciate it. Amin Vahedian.
Okay, see, great, I'm going to get that. And Amin, you are joining the Gateway now. You're going to be our staple, our third leg into this stool of exploratory conversation. So I am really excited to have you here today as well. And I think we're just going to jump right into it. I know we've been talking as society, as a community, as culture about ChatGPT and AI and different predictive models and being able to communicate with robots, all of that stuff. But at the end of the day, it does have an impact on our lives, much, much greater and in much different ways than maybe what we thought of. And one of the things that I keep on reading about and kind of hearing about is how these different tools like ChatGPT or Bard are able to create written language and how that is then presented into our world in different mediums that literally are founded on creating language, things like journalism, things like academic papers, things like research. How are we going to start navigating that environment when it could be created by a robot or a computer or an algorithm?
Yeah, I mean, Russ, this is a million-dollar question in the sense that we're still adapting to this. I think, you know, AI has been around for a long, long time, and there are tools that have helped us in writing for a long, long time. I think many people, especially non-native language, native speaker, use like tools like Grammarly for a while now. I was doing during my PhD dissertation, so it's definitely not new, but these tools are getting better and better, and the generative AI is kind of like the disruption point, right? And many times we only worry about, you know, students using them to cheat and stuff like that, but there is a whole world behind of, you know, academia where, you know, professor has to write paper because we do research for living as well as teaching. And you know, at what point or how do you include them in this paper is really up to debate, right? So there are many articles coming out about it. Different editors and publishers take different position on this topic. Some of them say, hey, you have to acknowledge, some of them are even questioning, do you need to put it as a co-author? And so it's really interesting, and I wanna let Amin also explain his point of view. But from my point of view, if AI is just used, and again, this is just my personal opinion. I'm not saying everybody share my point of view, and I think if AI is just used to enhance the way you are writing, again, especially for those of us that are not native speakers. Sometimes just finding the way to formulate a sentence and improving the clarity of a paragraph can take a lot of time, right? So if AI is just used for that, I don't see anything wrong with it. And to be honest, I don't even know if you have to acknowledge that you used AI for that, right? And my example is, you know, some schools, especially the top schools, have access to copy editors, even for conference papers. So, you know, the scholars in those schools write their paper to the best of their abilities, but then they have the resources, the finances to afford somebody that, you know, review their writing and make it look very good, right? So ChatGPT for other schools is literally the copy editors, you know. Now, different idea, different concept is if you say, hey, I'm interested in this topic, write a paper for me, right? Or write the introduction of the paper for me, which is, I mean, probably we'll talk about it in a second, then it's different, right? Because then it's not your idea, it's not about kind of rephrasing in a better way, in a more clear yeah. way, is about completely generating the content. And either case though, I think the key is that the human should be there to making sure that what is said by rephrasing and stuff like that is 100% accurate, right? Because we know that that can be hallucination. We know that we can be stuff thrown in there. There's nothing to do, right? Sometimes it throw in citations. They don't even exist that I even put in my original sentence when I try to rephrase stuff. So it's very interesting. I'll jump in it, and then we can dive more into the fact of the introduction episode I was talking about.
I completely agree that we are adapting, but and I think it's very important how we adapt, and the way we do that is we ask questions about what is the purpose of this writing. For example, if we answer that kind of question, we will understand whether what does it mean to have these language models write it instead of the person. The fact of the matter is, this is a writing tool. I mean, we have had tools that can polish and edit and fix spelling and grammar errors. And we can use ChatGPT and language models for that too. But this is fundamentally a model that can create text from scratch. That's its main use. And then when we say use of AI, it includes that. Use of large language models in writing, let's say, scientific papers. It includes writing from scratch too. So we can say, I think I have no problem. I think it's completely fine. And it's actually good if we can let researchers use large language models to make their text better, make their writing better. But then we should allow tools that only do that. You know what I mean? Not a tool that can be used for writing from scratch. Because when I was reading this article on The Verge, it was about whether it can be an author or not. Whether it can be an author or not, the AI model can be an author or not. And the best argument I see against it is that authorship is not just writing, it's accountability that comes with it too, the responsibility that comes with it too. You are generally, since the beginning of publishing, you're generally expected to defend and be responsible for what you wrote when it's being published to a mass audience. So we can't expect that from a machine. And if we say, no matter what you do, you can use AI model to generate your entire text from scratch, but you're responsible for it. It's yours. It's as if they're your words. But the truth is, it's not their words. We know that it's not their words if they do that. They might agree with it, but that's different. So even if we try to hold them to account, they still have a way to say that I didn't say this. For example, there could be a researcher who uses AI to generate text and publish. That text has inaccuracies that discredit them and the paper is withdrawn. If this was exactly their words, there would be no way for them to defend it. Even they say, this is your responsibility, the paper is retracted, you are fired. But they can still go to their friends and say, I just made a mistake of using this tool. I didn't make things up. You see, they are less accountable. No matter what we do, at the end of the day, at some point, they become less accountable. And I think that's a problem. So I think there should be a point where I will finish this. Sorry, Ross. I will finish it with this. I will say, when I'm reading something like a scientific paper, who's supposed to contribute to human knowledge, I want to hear the words directly produced by the researcher, even if it's a translation,
Well, I mean, you bring up a really good point within the accountability of all of this stuff. And accountability also then has that word trust come up to it. If no one's accountable, then no one trusts. Yeah. And we see a lot of areas within our world now where trust is, I would say, lacking, and it very quickly causes problems when we don't believe in what's going on anymore, or everyone's reality is different, or everyone's reality could be tainted, or there's space for something untrustworthy or something unaccountable to come into it. It just leaves that little question in your mind that, is this real? Is this true? Is this what I should be reading or watching with deep fakes, things like that? It covers a whole span. I mean, you brought up a great article. I want to credit the author as we're talking about this one. It's James Vincent with The Verge. He's a senior reporter there. And it's called ChatGPT Can't Be Credited as an Author, says World's Largest Academic Publisher. So I will make sure to put the link in the description of this podcast episode here, but definitely a good read. What I then ask as we're talking about that and going to accountability is, what happens when we can put more research out? Like, let me rephrase it. Is there a benefit to this? Can we start lowering the bar of this accountability and maybe get more things done, knowing that there might be more mistakes, knowing that there might be more falsehoods out there, but maybe move the progress of science, of research, of what we're learning as a humanity faster? Or if we do that at all, we absolutely destroy the system as a whole?
I mean, if I can jump in on this one, I think, again, the answer here from an academia standpoint is, we need to maintain rigor, right? It's not something, it's not a trade-off. You want to have rigor in all your research, although you might do a very relevant work. And there is always this rigor versus relevance trade-off, right? But, you know, if what you are putting in a paper is not, you are not sure that it's correct just because it's been completely generated by AI, although it might, again, push barriers, open discussions, and whatever it is, right, the reason why you're putting out there without being sure of what you're saying, I mean, that will create a huge problem. And it's already a big problem in academia, the fact that, you know, there's going to be more and more journals. They invite you to put paper out here and there. Everybody has pressure. Both of us are on a 10-year clock as of right now, right? So we do understand that. We do understand that. It's not easy to publish paper and to publish a lot of papers at the same time. That's again why we're trying to prioritize just a few projects where we really understand what's happening, right? So well, if you just
Biagio, yeah, with that, just to interject with that one, can it go the other way? So as articles are asking professors, asking researchers to submit things, can it go the other way where it's not necessarily the author using these tools to write the paper, but it's more these journals using AI to review them, kind of another, right, to speed up that process? And then I'll go back to your thought, but I just want to put that out there before I forget.
Yeah, I mean, it's two-way road. And I also can connect back to what Amin was saying about, you know, the trust and accountability and stuff like that. And it's I think another problem is, how do you know, right? How do you know what component of it is human generated, what component of it is AI generated? So the example I was talking about before, is a paper in Surface and Interface Journal, which Elsevier is the publisher. I don't want to say names of authors, but in the introduction starts by saying, certainly here is a possible introduction for your topic column, and then the introduction of their topic, right? So to me, this is clear, easy to say that it's copy and paste from ChatGPT. I'm not sure how is it possible that the author didn't pick it up. I'm not sure if they were trying to be provoking the audience or if this is made on purpose. I hope so, because then there's going to be, you know, copy editors behind the scene that miss that. There's going to be reviewer that miss that, associate editor that miss that, and so on and so forth, right? I can continue forever. But if it's not something like this, how do you know what Amin was saying before, that the words are the author's words, right? There is not a simple way. And by the way, it's not only about writing the text of the paper. It can be, what about if I'm just using AI to brainstorm an idea, right? Or if I use AI to help me out with the literature review, or if I use AI to write the code for my analysis. I mean, that then the conversation becomes bigger and bigger, and the problem is at the table becomes bigger and bigger. One thing for sure is, and I think I've seen this more and more, for example, I just reviewed for the American Comprehensive Information System, as is asking us to disclose what is the use of AI in your review, right? They try to understand that. They're trying to see, they probably know that people are using it. So they want to know, okay, what did you use it for? Did you use it just to rewrite sentences? Did you use it to complete it by the review? I think it was forbidden to upload the paper and write the review for you, but he can do that, right? So it's unethical, and ethics is a big component of academia and making it work right, the right way, but it's a thin line. Again, I think all of us, and students underestimate that, we have a lot on our plates, especially when it comes to the semester. And again, it's not something that I tell people to do, but I can see some people skipping that, right? And say, okay, yeah, this is the paper, do the review for me. How can I tell, right? And we know that there are tools for that, but there are also tools that are not good enough, or tools that still use AI, detect AI, doesn't seem a good idea to me, right? So if the editors decide to go their route, I don't know where is the end game of this. This is for sure, the increasing the speed of the review cycle would be beneficial, but at the same time, you will lower the quality, you will lower your standard. And again, I don't think that that's what top journal wants to do. Maybe those, you know, journal, they want to get in the space and want to promise very quick turnaround will do that. But again, how ethical it is, how rigorous it is. Is that's where you want to publish your research? I'm not sure. It depends on people's standards. But yeah, well, that's probably not where I will do that.
Right.
Yeah. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, you're good. You're good. I mean, I'm then wondering, and I want you to jump in on that one, but I'm wondering, do we get to a point where we just need norms, like defined behaviors utilizing AI that we then as a culture, as a community, accept and know that, okay, that's okay to use it, kind of like, you know, texting people and the evolution of emojis, like what those kind of mean is like, okay, hey, you know what, if I'm sending a winky face right now, I better not send it to, you know, my colleagues, because that has different connotations that, you know, 10 years ago it was just a winky face, like that's all it is. AI is specifically these tools going to then have some case scenarios that we all as humans say, that's not cool, that's not how we want to use it, and maybe there's not explicit rules, but like we start to learn that you don't do that, or you do that in this situation.
I think there are two kinds of scenarios where one is, I, for example, when you receive a text from someone you know, you reasonably expect that that's their word, their words, right? So there are scenarios where we expect the written text that we see are someone's words. Then I don't think it's okay to use ChatGPT for that, because that's what we are interested in. For example, let's say you have a romantic partner. I don't know if anyone has seen the South Park episode where Cartman finds out about ChatGPT, and now he has a great relationship with his girlfriend, because uses the text her, and ChatGPT uses its knowledge, you know, it's what's learned from great romantic texts to write really good text. So that is clearly unethical, because those are not Cartman's words. And that is not the relationship he's developing. And when it comes to scientific publishing, I think we should expect. I mean, this is the two separate arguments: whether they should use it or should we expect the words to be the researchers' words. Like, should we even care about that? And I think the Verge article is rightfully bringing up that argument that if we don't care whose word it is, and if it's ChatGPT's word, it's better to credit them as author. And then we don't do that for trust and accountability reasons. So we shouldn't. We shouldn't use this to write scientific text because, you know, at some where does this writing skill come from? It comes from human writing. The way language model has been trained is it's been given human writing. And it's developed this writing skill. So at some point, we should be careful not to lose our writing ability, and we should advance it. The reason our writing is different today, and arguably, I would say, it's clearer and less vague than 300 years ago, is because we kept writing, and we improved it as we wrote. And it will stop improving if we stop writing, and it will stay the same. And the other aspect of that is, the territory we cede, there should be some territory humans will not cede to the machines. And I think it has to be the scientific territory. This is not the purpose of scientific writing, is to contribute to human knowledge. And it's not about model knowledge. It's not about machine knowledge. It's about contributing to human knowledge. So I think humans need to talk to each other directly. Without the use of machines, with their own words, with the help of machines to translate, polish, or enhance, or improve their clarity of their word, that's completely fine. But they should speak to each other with their own words to say, here is what I found out about the world that we didn't know yesterday, now we do.
If I can jump on this, so there are a couple of points here. I think some of them I completely share. So the one point I completely share is, if you completely rely on this tool, right, you will lose your ability to do those things. It's almost the same thing of when I was growing up, I had to do sums in my head when I was going to the grocery stores. And I was really good at math. And then if I start using always the calculator, then I will forget how to do those things. I'm not going to, at one point, I will lose that skill, right? So if you never write on your own or even start writing your paper, like I was saying before, like you completely from scratch, develop a research paper, then yes, in the long run, you will never get good at it, right? You will never be good at writing. And if those tools don't improve, or if you don't have any more access to them, then you are in big trouble, right? Because it's definitely a skill that you need to have.
Yeah, collectively, those tools won't improve.
Right, but you can also use those tools. So, and again, and that goes back to the, so it is a gray area, right? How much can you use them? For example, what about rephrasing a complete sentence? Well, you have the idea. You have the idea, that's your work, is deducted from your results of the analysis, but then the way that you put it is just is not effective. And then if you use ChatGPT, it rephrases a good bit of it. But it rephrases in a way that is much clearer. Is that acceptable or not? I still wrote it, right? But the words are not mine anymore. They probably use a different vocabulary. In fact, I saw people posting around, if you see these words, they're probably ChatGPT words, right? Because he tends to use some words more than others, right?
Yeah.
But again, if I'm a native speaker, and not all the native speakers have an advantage of writing in English. So there are native speakers that don't know how to write a scientific paper. It's not like a one-to-one thing, but they definitely have an advantage of people that are not native speaker. And again, people that have access to good copy editor will do that work for you, will polish the terms that you use it, the way that you structure the sentence. Again, so to me, that's not nothing new, right?
Yeah.
And you, by the way, you can also use it to improve yourself. You are saying like you're never going to get better, but you can tell, hey, I have this sentence. What is wrong with it? What tips can I use for the next time?
In that scenario, you are writing and it's helping you. That's completely
right.
You're writing, and those are, I'm not saying literal words. This is the voice in your head you want to communicate, and the voice in my head would be Turkish, yours would be Italian, and I want to communicate that. And I don't, I mean, we have to use English words to get into scientific
treatment. Right.
So
sure.
But there's still the thing that I want to say, that I want to say, that I came up with. And then I think that's the boundary I would say we need to draw. That is, it's the content of this, what is being said here, all of it, and not even a small percentage of it, all of it should be what I thought of, not things that it was contributed. But you had another interesting point. How about research ideas? That, I think that's completely fine. I think that's one of the greatest things about the promise of AI with helping scientific discovery is it will ask better research questions. It would be able to ask research questions. We get research questions from everywhere. We get them from people who are not don't have a scientific career. We get them from other normal conversations or are even observations in the world. Then this is one.
The problem with that is that then I can have an argument that then is not a human idea. So I'm not contributing to the human knowledge because it's an idea coming from AI or co-created with AI. So it's a human AI
solution to a problem or like a research question. What do you mean by that idea?
Yeah, just like a research idea. Right, a topic. I have a topic in mind, and a lens. I'm looking at this topic. Right, what if
your findings are your contributions? Then ChatGPT is not doing the research.
But it gave me the research question though, brainstorming from it.
We get research questions from everywhere. You could watch the rain and find out a research. You know, and
well,
you could
talk
to ChatGPT and get a research question. My point is you will answer that question, that research question, and you would say, here's what I found, and here's the level of its validity, and you will write a paper about it, and everything that is in that paper is what you want to say, that originated from your thoughts, except the research question. You can credit ChatGPT and say, ChatGPT asked this question, and I thought it was an interesting question, but contribution is not finding that research question. Contribution is the method you used and your argument that method is valid and what you found and your argument that what you found is valid. I think that's the contribution. Right?
It depends. Well, if you're talking about theoretical and practical, but that's a different topic and that's for another. But what I'm saying is I think it's a thin line, right? I think we can all agree that publishers have a lot on their plate as of right now, and there is not a one-fit-all solution because, again, you can use it for multiple purposes. So when is it? And how, first of all, how do you enforce people not to use it? How do you do it?
I don't know. I don't think
And why? And why some journal will do it and some other will not do it? And is it that fair, right? I think, again, there is not a thin line. There is not a good answer. And I think only those that really made the mistake of keeping, here is an introduction for you. Certainly, here is an introduction for you. Yeah. Those are the ones that, you know, get, I don't know how many people reshare that paper just because of that. But again, maybe it was done on purpose. It was done to get that famous. They disclosed that with the editor. But
yeah. I'm glad you brought that up because the Wiley announcement, which Russ, if you would be kind enough to post a link for that too in the description. I keep referring to these things that our audience haven't seen yet.
I will make sure they're all the articles we reference are posted in the description.
Thank you very much. The Wiley announcement, part of their AI suite is the detection of generative AI generated text, which I don't know who's offering this service to them. And how is that not fraud?
Right.
That's what I'm asking. Like, that's not, how are you going to tell?
That
This is by definition. This is the first technology we've had so far that has passed the Turing test. It's passed the Turing test. It's over.
And by the way, I've seen a lot of experts of AI, like a professor saying, don't think that those tools are good because it's like AI trying to detect AI. Right.
Yeah. Don't pay for those services.
And on top of that, you're making available text of people, right, to those tools to be trained on, right?
Exactly.
Some of them,
text
right?
That is so not published yet, and it's confidential. Yes.
It's double bad because then maybe other people research is inspired by that. I mean, it's just, yeah, it's. again, it's a tough environment to be in, and we don't have the answer, but I think this connects to a lot of things, right? It connects to scientific papers, and but most of our audience is student as well, right? So what about student assignments? What is the use that they can have, they can do of these tools? And I think one of the big suggestions that came up our conversation so far is the fact that don't completely rely on them, right? Because you will lose your ability to write, which is a critical ability when you have, unless you decide to become a ChatGPT. And then if everything is done, everything that you do is done by ChatGPT, to me, you are becoming replaceable by a definition, right? Because it's already doing your work. So people will figure it out. ChatGPT is $20 a month, the pro version. And, you know, why do I have to have somebody when I can use ChatGPT for doing the same work, if it is exactly that work, right? So I think that's the kind of like, I don't know if you want to, I don't know if we want to turn to that, Russ, but to me,
well,
when I tell my student,
you bring up a really good fact. I always have seen or have been under the understanding that when it's the written word, we tend to be a little more territorial. You know, we have plagiarism, we have very specific rules within that stuff. But
I mean, from
but from my perspective, I think when we get into things like code, that's been a little more vague. You know, you have a lot of it where you can go right now, GitHub, you can grab full sections of code, it's done, it's there. Where if I were to have a student go and grab a pretty common phrase of a paragraph about a book that is read by every high schooler, you know, something like that, I would be like, that's a problem. But within some of the tech areas within code, I'm kind of like, there's even a little bit of like, well, grab it. Like, why aren't you utilizing your resources? Mm-hmm. And that's then where AI is saying, hey, I can write code too. Yes. So we have these areas where it's kind of okay, even though in essence is like, yes, you didn't write that code.
Right.
Where like,
and you don't reference.
Yeah.
And you don't reference who wrote it while you had to reference.
Nowhere in the code. You don't cite it inside the code, you know, like, you know.
I think it's a great point, because I think we should ask that same question again. Who's this being written for? So if a student is writing code for the assignment and they're supposed to write it themselves, it's wrong. They should write it themselves because it's supposed to teach them something. But if you are writing code for a computer to run, to get a result from it, there's nothing wrong with it.
Unless you don't understand the code. Right?
Unless you understand the code, then yes.
Because then you cannot verify it's correct. And then you can really make big mistake.
you have ChatGPT write it and you can understand it's correct. I don't think there's anything wrong with it, because what is coding on its own? The coding on its own is telling computer to do something for you. And that's what it is we do for ChatGPT at a higher level. I don't think that's fundamentally different. And that's what I did. I needed one simple function for one of my research projects. And I asked ChatGPT, wrote me a 20-line function, C++ function. And then I'm using it and it's working. And I read the whole thing and it made sense. And I could have spent days on coming up with the same elegant logic that it came up with. I don't think it came up with it. Probably written somewhere else on the internet and it found it.
Yeah, I was about to say this, right? ChatGPT is just Stack Overflow on steroids, right? It's nothing new. Like, everybody that learns a new programming language is gonna get into some errors, and when you get into some errors, you have to learn how to debug. In the beginning, debugging is probably copy and pasting the error in Google or Stack Overflow, and it's going to point it to Stack Overflow, right? Because there are other people that run into the same error. So we've been doing this since forever, and I never heard of anybody to acknowledge Stack Overflow for helping writing the code of the analysis. So I think I share your the same idea, right? If ChatGPT is making my coding faster, but I still understand what he's doing, I still know that code is doing what it's supposed to be doing, right? I think it's just And again, that's why I tell my students, in general, this AI tool has to be your superpowers, right? They are bringing a simple car into a, they are transforming a simple car to a Ferrari. But this, the rest of the car has to be there. The engine, your mind has to be there. That's why you need to learn how to code. Because otherwise, hey, it might look good. It might build a dashboard. You can ask, build me a dashboard, right? It will do it. Or build me a website. It will do it. But are you sure everything is going to work the proper way, right? Before you release the dashboard, before you release the website. That's the key
thing. I do think if you ask ChatGPT to write a code that you don't understand and you take it and deploy it in the world somewhere, that's unethical. I believe that's unethical.
Go ahead.
Ask for a more complicated function that like was new and unique to my research, and it couldn't do it. It did give me something. It's remarkable how confident it is. But it did give me something. But I read through it and immediately could tell that it was wrong. I did spend a couple of weeks on developing that on my own. But if I didn't understand, if I asked it to write it for me in Pascal, whatever that defunct language is, or Fortran, I wouldn't have known that it's wrong. And I wouldn't have allowed myself to take and deploy it somewhere and run and record its output and report it. I wouldn't have done that because that's unethical.
Well, then, you know, these are all really, really interesting areas of that same conversation coming down to, like, what are we doing with this? You know, when I know some of our listeners, when we started this, we were like, oh, you're talking about, you know, white papers and academic research. And it doesn't, it seems to the lay person, to a lot of people that aren't in academia, you're like, who cares? But very quickly, it starts snowballing everywhere to the point that now, can you, at some point, there's going to be a dark web version of ChatGPT where you can ask it to create a virus. And if I'm just messing around as a 14-year-old or a whole government organization, you know, that might have ill will, now I'm just getting random viruses and I don't necessarily have the ethical standards anymore. And I'm just going to send it out, even if it doesn't do what I want it to do. I just want it to cause problems, right? Like,
how do you know that's not happening?
Right, exactly. Yeah, right. That's probably have to be happening, you know.
Did The Simpsons have an episode about it? If yes, it's going to happen. But that's a different story. So I think what is clear to me is that humans per se don't really have a solution for this problem unless you are the people that build these tools, right? And how they
even them, they're just doing it. They're just kind of saying, can we do it? And I mean, that's where I think a lot of people get scared about it. Like, could this be the downfall of humanity?
I think they can put some guardrails on, you know, what the people can using this thing for.
That's our only by the way. The guardrails. Yeah.
Whatever.
Right. iRobot. What did you say? iRobot.
Only hope.
Oh yeah, yeah. So I mean, honestly, I see it as the only solution. Just because, again, there are unwritten rules in research, Russ. And by the way, by working with different people from different disciplines, it's very different across disciplines. Right. So there is ethics that go beyond research, right? Ethics in how you conduct yourself when you do a review, the fact that you keep it, you know, secret, all this kind of stuff, right? It's peer review system, blinded review system, right? But there, you know, there might be people that do stuff not in an ethical way, and they send a review toward their friends. There is an associate editor that will send it with his friends that are review. All those kind of stuff already exists, right? There might be paper out there that got out just because of that. I'm not accusing anybody, I'm not saying, but story has been heard of stuff like that. I think since the beginning of in order to get tenure, right?
Or that's a human interest. You know, if there's a way, there's always going to. And I think when we look at these things, we have 90% of people following and doing it and using AI for the right things, but it's gonna be that 10% that try and push it
So that's exactly the point, right? So the point is there's going to be unwritten rules about AI and it comes to ethics of individuals. But again, it's very hard to enforce, right? Right. And it's very hard to detect. And so it's, I think publisher and editors, they are big troubles. And, you know, I did the review from scratch. It was a topic I know very well. And I didn't use AI at all because there was that question, to be honest. I usually use AI to rephrase some of my sentences. But because there was that question, did you use AI? I didn't want to give the authors the impression that that's not my, you know, my work. And yeah. And again, I, when it comes to review, I try to help them to get better. I didn't want them to think there was AI helping them to get better, right?
Right.
So right. That kind of, you know, and it cost me a lot of time more, right? Because to be honest, again, way more efficient when I use those tools in writing 2-3 pages of review, right? Way more efficient. Just because, again, I write the things that I want to put in there, and it helps me to rephrase them in a better way, in a more clean way. And now I have to look back and forth a couple of times. Okay, does this sentence make sense? Might make sense in my brain, but maybe they can misinterpret it. And then I ask them to do stuff that is not what I ask them to do, right? Or yeah. I suggest them to do some stuff that is not what I want them to do. So it's very hard, right? At least for me, it's been a big change is learning how to write in English, because I come from Italy where we write completely differently from that, right? On top yeah. of not being a native speaker. It's just a way we structure sentences and stuff like that.
Right.
So I lost time. But again, there was that question, and it kind of put me in a position where, you know, I didn't want them to believe, hey, this guy already uses AI. So yeah. even if he's saying he's using just for A, B, and C, I don't know if it's true.
You just right? didn't want to mark that yes.
Yes.
I right. know. You just didn't want to trip that flag. Yes. but I have 2 points about, maybe one, about detectability. So when with the printing industry, we had people freaked out back then that everyone can publish anything now that if they can afford a printer. And when printers became household items, then the concern was even more. And what they did in terms of regulation for printers, for every printer manufacturer, and manufacturing a printer is very difficult still, because it's just they're very mechanically very complicated devices. They put this regulation in that every printer, whatever they, when they print something, they should put the unique ID of that particular printer on it. And it is, it's not visible, but every printer puts a signature on whatever they give out. And then it is possible most of the time. I mean, it's not perfect because that signature gets damaged over time because paper is passed around and all of that. But it is possible that to some level to trace where this printed material came from to a degree. So I think one detectability solution would be to build in a code into any generated text, like put in a pattern in it, using some prime number technique with the formula with a whatever number of word count or number of letters or spaces or whatever into the text itself, so that when it's given to a function, it can trip a flag and say, this is generated by AI. And no human can detect it, only that function can detect it. That, like, I think we should be researching that type of technology to intentionally mark it. And then the governments can go after the developers of these, can regulate the development of these large language models and say, you have to build in this marker, and all of the text that you generate should be detectable using this marker. I think that would be one solution. I don't know if it's technically entirely feasible or not. The other solution.
And how expensive it is as well. Right?
Who, I don't think.
Who has to pay those costs?
I think it is possible that it won't be costly, because you can just configure a model before training to only generate a text that, like, in a very subtle way match. It's like it won't still be won't noticeable to human eye, but that big giant function can detect. You know what I mean? I don't know. That's what I'm saying. It might not be possible. But what I'm saying is another solution, potential solution for detection could be not use deep learning. if and we don't have an alternative technology that is as capable as deep learning right now. And the sad thing is we're not even researching anything to replace it. Everyone who does research in machine learning now has switched to deep learning entirely, completely. I don't know how the only way I can see to incentivize alternative models to deep learning where we can read the model and can tell that this model is going to be truthful all the time. This is the likelihood of this model being making things up. The only way I can think that kind of research is incentivized is through government grants. And like, for example, NSF mm-hmm. comes out and says, we will give this much money if you research this. But otherwise, it seems like industry, academia, perfectly content with text that is completely undetectable and models that are completely unreadable and can do and say whatever they want and without us noticing.
Or maybe they are doing the work behind the scene. We just don't see the outcome because it's super complex, right? It's very difficult to complex. I think again, we are academics. We like to talk about stuff. I think we're running out of time. But I think it's clear, Ras and Amin, that we need to go back on this topic and maybe bring somebody that's kind of an expert on ethics of AI. Yeah. That can be like a great, you know, putting together and say, hey, where do we stand as human in using this tool from an ethics standpoint? Because we are not. We're just, again, sharing our ideas and opinions, but we are not ethics experts. And again, this stuff are not easy.
Right. I think that's a great place to end this week's conversation. Thank you, Amin and Biagio, for being here, giving us your great insight as always. And I think if nothing else, when we take away from this conversation, we as humans are doing some incredible things, but we always have more work to do. So.